Thank you for tuning in to the Hudson Mohawk Magazine on WOOC 105.3 FM. I'm Steve Pierce. On this program, we'll have a long-form interview with outgoing Rensselaer County Executive Kathy Gimeno. Welcome to the studios, Kathy.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
What is it that that made you decide to not seek re-election? It seemed like it would have been an easy thing for you to win again, if the past is any indication of the future. What made you change your what made you make the decision?
Well, actually, it was a change of mind, because initially, at the beginning of this year, I thought I would run again. And the more I thought about it, the more I realized that as I'm getting older, I have less gas in the tank, if you will, at the end of the day. And this job, though I love it, is 70 or 80 hours a week. By the time you get done with the work at the office, the work out in the public, and then back to home to prepare for work in the office the next day. And I just decided it was time that I spend some time on other things that I had not had enough time for throughout my career.
And I was going to ask you this at the end of the interview, but why not start with it? What is it that you're going to go on to do? What are those other things?
Well, one of the things is certainly to spend more time with my family. And they have not seen me a lot. In fact, my husband sees me about 2 hours a day, so the idea of going 24/7 with each other has got us both a little nervous, but I'm sure it'll be fine. I want to continue to do some board work and perhaps add a little bit to that. I want to spend more time with my grandchildren. They're now 7 and 8, and I want to spend time with them while they still like spending time with their Grammy, and before the friends become the more important thing in their life.
And you're a longtime resident of Lansingburg?
Yes, we've been in Lansingburg for about 37 years. And in fact, that's part of what we're looking at immediately, is to try to downsize, not to move too far out of the area, but to get into a smaller place. And we have 37 years worth of stuff in our attic, in our basement, in our garage. So that's our winter project, if you will, that hopefully does not spill into spring and summer.
And were you born and raised in Troy as well?
Yes, born and raised in Troy, and actually lived here my whole life. So it's a very comfortable place for both myself and my husband.
Great. And so I guess you mentioned the long day you have as Rensselaer County Executive. Mm-hmm. What does the Rensselaer County Executive do, or what did you do as Rensselaer County Executive?
Well, that's a good question. A lot of people don't even know what a county executive is, and so I tell them it's what the mayor is to the city, the county executive is to the county. And so I oversee the implementation of all of the county's programs, other than, of course, what the district attorney and sheriff do. So we oversee a lot of different program areas. Certainly social services is one that people hopefully know a bit about. Since I've been county executive, I talk about that a lot. Well, we also have mental health services. We have public health services. We have a nursing home, 362-bed nursing home that we operate. We have a 364-cell jail, though I don't have immediate oversight of that. We do work with the sheriff to make sure that he has the resources that we need. We also have 330 miles of roads that we maintain here in the county, and several bridges that we maintain as well. So we're very much a full-service county, and we support the court system by providing the district attorney's office with the resources they need, by providing a public defender, conflict defender. So there's just a myriad of services that people rely on from the county. We run 5 different senior centers throughout the county, so we provide services to our seniors, both in those centers and then as well, oftentimes in their homes, we provide services. We provide services to our veterans, primarily connecting them with the benefits that they're entitled to by virtue of their service. We also provide transportation to our veterans, to the VA hospital for doctor's appointments or for the daycare services that they provide there. So there's a lot of services that the county offers.
Now, is that long list of services unusual for a county to provide, or is that pretty standard?
It varies a little bit. Not every county in the state has a nursing home, for instance. As well, not every county has a full-service public health department, but we do. The rest of the services are very similar from county to county. Much of it is dictated by state. Counties were initially created to be the administrative arm of state government, and so we still have that role. Over time, the state has not only required us to provide services, but also to tax our residents to pay for those services that the state wants us to provide. So those we refer to as unfunded state mandates, those are services that we provide and the state partially pays for, and we supplement the difference out of property taxes or sales taxes.
I had not heard of the county being described as the administrative arm of the state. Is that something lost in the mist of history, or is that a fairly standard arrangement for county government?
It is a fairly standard arrangement, and that was how counties were started, to be the feet on the street, if you will, of state services. And we were allowed at one point in time historically to begin to levy property taxes to provide local services, services that are not mandated by the state, but people were looking for the county to provide. We maintain, as I say, county roads and bridges. That is not necessarily a mandated service, if you will. The road patrol of the sheriff's department is not a mandated service. Much of our aging services, those are not mandated. Veteran services, youth services. So those are the things that we were initially allowed to levy a property tax in order to provide. Since that time, the state has started shifting some of the costs of their programs. So that was where we began to get into the sales tax business, if you will. The state allowed us to levy a sales tax in order to be able to provide for those services that the state requires.
You mentioned the property tax and sales tax. Is an income tax an option for the county?
Nope. The income tax is limited to the state and a couple of municipalities in the state, New York City and Yonkers in particular, that had financial trouble at one point in time or another and looked to the income tax as a way to relieve the continued burden on the property taxpayers. But that is strictly limited by the state.
So, for instance, in Schenectady, where Metroplex is a mechanism to transfer some of the wealth from the suburbs back into the center city, mm-hmm. That's not property tax-based. That's all sales tax?
That's sales tax, correct. And that's based, on state legislation. There was a bill that was passed several years back that allowed for the creation of Metroplex and allowed for that intercept of the state or the county sales tax.
And is there anything any option to do something like Metroplex in Rensselaer County, or is that a unique situation?
That was, a unique situation at the time that Schenectady undertook that. Again, it required state legislation. I recall at the time, because it was when I worked down at the Senate, that there was a lot of back and forth on that. They weren't even sure that that was actually going to happen. So I don't know that we would likely see that replicated elsewhere in the state.
Now, property tax and sales tax are sometimes referred to as regressive taxes because of the impact on mm-hmm. low-income residents. And I know that Rensselaer County has more than its share of low-income people living in mm-hmm. it. Do you find that that form of taxation is problematic for the people who live in the county?
Yes, and we've often talked about that, particularly when it comes to property taxes. Because so much of the state services are financed at the local level, be it at the county level for social services, for instance, et cetera, children with special needs, et cetera, as well, so much of the school budgets are financed at the local level. Our property taxes here in New York State are significantly higher than our neighboring states and every other state in the country, 80% higher, I think, than the national average was the last figure that I saw out of the Tax Foundation in Washington, D.C. And so we are now all living under this tax cap to try to keep the property taxes from growing, which is a very valid need in New York State. Just because you own property doesn't mean that you have cash to pay a continually growing property tax bill. And particularly we see this with our seniors. They may own a home that they've owned for years, but have very limited income. Perhaps they have a Social Security check of, you know, $1,000, $1,200 a month. With that, they've got to pay for their utilities. They've got to pay for food. They've got to pay for medical bills. And on top of that, they've got to pay for their property taxes. So to continue to pay for so much of the services on that property tax basis can result in our seniors having to leave their homes, can result in young families not being able to get into a home in the first place, own a home, that is, because they can't afford the additional cost beyond the mortgage, that being the property tax bill every month. So it is very difficult for both young families and the elderly when we continue to turn to the property tax basis to finance a lot of these programs.
Yeah, I know from travel, I live in Rensselaer County, and from traveling around, one of the notable aspects of county living is the natural beauty and the vast amount of mm-hmm. open space. And yes. so much of that, I think, is because there are old farmsteads or small houses on large tracts of land owned by people mm-hmm. who don't have much money. And so I would imagine yes. that property tax could easily force people to subdivide and develop their land in order to pay for the taxes on it.
Yeah, there is a lot of pressure and has historically been a lot of pressure on our agriculture base here in Rensselaer County. And you can actually see it moving up through the Hudson Valley, where there are people, for instance, who work in New York City or work down in the lower Hudson Valley that want to live out in the country a little bit. And so there's a lot of pressure on our farmers to sell their land for development purposes. Several years back, the county put together a plan to protect farmland, and we've successfully protected, I want to say, over 7,000 acres, I believe, in concert with the homeowners, with the towns, and with the ASA, who comes in and oversees that process for us. And these are good farmland. It can't be, you know, something that is in my backyard and I say it's good farmland. It's got to be really good farmland, active farming. And it protects the development rights, but gives the landowner some money so that, for instance, if it's an elderly farmer, they may take that money and retire and be able to sell the farm to a young farmer at a very reasonable price. If it's somebody that intends to stay in farming, they can use that money to finance additional equipment for the farm, to try something new. Sometimes our farmers will, for instance, get out of dairy and get into something else, but they need that capital up front to get that process underway. So we've worked very hard to make sure that those farms that should be maintained, either with the current owners or new owners, have that opportunity to do so and are protected from that pressure of wanting to sell to somebody that's going to put up houses.
Now, I've noticed when I travel south of Rensselaer County and into Columbia County, it's almost like flipping a switch. There's a noticeable change in the counties. What's different about Columbia County? What makes it the way that it is, and particularly in comparison to Rensselaer County?
I think a couple of things. One, Columbia County is a little more rural. They don't have as big a city, for instance, as the city of Troy. They are not as close to the capital, so they're not quite as much of they don't see quite as much of their population heading into Albany every day. But I think it's more the rural nature that really jumps out at you. There are more farms, whether you're heading into Columbia County or whether you're heading north up into Washington County, you see that as well. There's more farming. In Rensselaer County, we have, I think, a good mix of agriculture and other industry so that we can make certain that there are jobs here for the people that we're trying to attract in to live here as well. You always want to have that balance of commercial property and residential property in order to be able to provide for the services that people need.
I think one of the notable things about living here is that you can work in Troy and very quickly be out in the country. There's really relatively little suburban sprawl and traffic. It's pretty amazing. I don't know if that's by design or luck. What would you attribute that to?
I think somewhat of it is by luck. I watch the traffic every day that you see the traffic reports on TV or on the radio in the morning in that north way, though it opened up a lot of the area to the north of us and made it accessible for those that live or work in Albany and Rensselaer County. It also has created a great deal of congestion north and south. We don't have as much congestion east and west of Albany as you see on the Northway, yet people can be home in suburbia or even in the very rural areas and, you know, 10 or 20 minutes from downtown Albany. So I like to say that Rensselaer County has something for everyone, no matter what type of lifestyle you like. If you're if you like the urban area, you can live in Troy and Rensselaer. Suburban, we have lots of that, and then the rural areas. Interestingly, you mentioned about all of the open space that we have in the county. Much of that open space until the last few years was privately owned. So you didn't have the ability to traverse that, you know, whether by foot or, you know, snowmobiles or bikes or whatever. We have the Rensselaer Plateau Alliance, the Rensselaer Land Trust, both of whom have been working very hard to identify and make available to the public areas throughout the county that you can get in and hike and bike and bird watch or just, you know, really enjoy the great outdoors. And they've really made so much of that land, so much more of that land accessible to people throughout the county.
My friend and neighbor, Jim Bonesteel, has been a motivating force in the Rensselaer Plateau Alliance.
Yes.
And I always rib him about the signs that pop up every now and then complaining about the alliance. And I assume it's based on tax-exempt status of some of the land when they purchase it from private landowners and then turn it into publicly owned land or nonprofit ownership. What is your take on that?
Well, certainly that's a concern we always worry about, whether it's the Rensselaer Plateau Alliance or whether it's some of the not-for-profits in the city, that the more we see of them purchasing property, that property is coming off of the tax base. Now, I do have to say that's not always the case with the Rensselaer Plateau Alliance because some of it, you're getting an easement and there's still property taxes being paid. I think people are also worried if the land is taken, that will somehow then restrict neighboring property owners in terms of what they're going to be able to do with their property. But they've been very, very good about working with neighboring property owners and working with the municipalities to try to build partnerships and support for what they're doing. And I think what they're doing is important. As I say, there's a lot of land that looks as though you could just go for a stroll in the woods. But in point of fact, that's not the case. You're trespassing in a lot of instances. Even, you know, if you were to take a walk around the Tomahannock, unless you have a fishing license in hand, you're gonna find yourself in a little bit of trouble. So they have certainly added a tremendous asset to the county as a selling point to say, you know, come on over to Rensselaer County. We have wonderful places that you can go and get reacquainted with nature and just, you know, relax and have a wonderful time. So they've done a terrific job, and I think they have won over some people who were initially skeptical about it. Excuse me.
We're speaking with Kathy Gimeno, the four-term executive of Rensselaer County, who is speaking with us about her past and her present and maybe a little bit about her future. One of the exciting things about having you here, and you mentioned before we began speaking that you don't have any political aspirations moving forward, so hopefully we can touch on some of the controversial things that you might not have wanted to speak about as an active politician. I don't know. We'll find out in a minute. One of the things I was going to ask you, though, I know that the Rensselaer County Legislature is often derided as a do-nothing body. People make fun of it as, you know, they're making they're voting on proclamations and that sort of thing. And that's big and expensive, I guess, on a certain level. What is your feeling about that? Do you think is it a necessary body? Is it part of a mandate? And then if it isn't, what are the options for how it might be organized?
The legislative body is a necessary part of government. You know, we learned early on in government the three branches of government, judicial, executive, and legislative, and their job is to pass resolutions, to pass laws that basically set the tenor of what is it that Rensselaer County is going to do, what services are we going to provide, to the extent that we have the ability to say so, because again, so much of what we provide is mandated by the state. They also vote on the budget, which I've always looked at that budget document as our covenant with the people. If you give us this much money, these are the services that we're going to provide to you. And that's our game plan for the year that I follow when I'm overseeing the departments. So it's a very necessary role that they play in government. Now, there are a lot of resolutions that are congratulating this group or that group or recognizing this group or the other. And if you're looking at it from the outside, you might think that that's a bit of fluff. But the reality is these groups come in, they get the opportunity to come into the county office building, which might feel, a little bit foreign to them if they're not, followers of government or not involved in government. They get to be recognized by the folks that represent them in that legislative body. And here I'm thinking about just a couple off the top of my head. We now have a citizen of the month that we recognize. The first person that we recognize so was Bill Gaylord from Hoosick Falls, who's just an amazing community volunteer and contributes so much of his time to the ambulance squad, to the community band, to the kids at school, to the Red Cross, etc. And so the legislature congratulates him. It goes into the permanent record, and we hold him out as someone that, we want to thank, but also we want others to emulate. Look at the great stuff that this individual is doing. We have Eagle Scouts that come down. We have kids at school. One young man recently was honored because he was collecting Christmas cards that then get sent to Macy's, I think, and for every card, $2 gets contributed to a cause, and I can't remember which cause it was, something, I think, cancer-related. But just people making a real difference, and I think that's important work because it highlights to the rest of the citizenry that even if you are not an elected official, that you have a way of contributing to your community that's impactful, that's important. And that's a lot of what they do with those resolutions that recognize this particular month or this particular person. It shows people that everybody has a way of contributing to their community and then, in fact, being a part of government because you're being recognized by the government for doing that.
Yeah, I think at some point in the past, the Sanctuary for Independent Media was recognized by the legislature, which was a beautiful thing.
Yes.
Do you think, is there more substantive work in terms of budgeting and policy that the legislature does as well?
Well, sure. The legislature, in our case, we are a charter county. And so what that means is we have a style of county government that is not exactly as prescribed by state law. State law would require a board of supervisors, and we moved away from that back in the mid-70s to this legislature executive form of government. In that charter, it prescribes that, for instance, the Board of Elections and the Sewer District and the Environmental Management Council, as well as the auditor's office, they all fall under the legislative branch in our county government. So they also have the responsibility of overseeing those departments. All of the elections work falls under the county legislature. The sewer district, which affects, probably two-thirds of the people that live in Rensselaer County and probably half of the landmass, that falls under the legislature. So there's also the day-to-day responsibility of those departments that they have.
Does that mean that you don't have any control over them? It's completely controlled by the legislature?
That's correct, for those departments, yeah, other than budget. And, of course, we work with the legislature on the budget, so we have a hand in terms of prescribing what they will be dealing with, subject to, you know, negotiations with the county legislature.
Interesting. Is that an unusual arrangement?
No, I don't think so. I think in every county, it may be a little bit different, but generally the Board of Elections does fall under the legislature. In the past, our emergency services used to fall under the legislature, and that was moved under the executive. So that can change as well at times, but generally that's pretty standard.
Well, for policy wonks such as myself, I'm sure we could talk a long time about the intricacies of organization for the county. It's fascinating, yeah. Particularly considering it's so old.
Yes.
There's a lot of history. Mm-hmm. But speaking of history, I see in your bio that you've had a long history in Rensselaer County. After you graduated from Siena, you went to work for the county in the IT department.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. What were you doing there?
I began as a programmer analyst. Let me take it back a little bit. When I was at Siena, I was a math major, and I fully expected that I would become a teacher. I did my student teaching at Shaker High School, and though I did very well, I had butterflies in my stomach every morning to the point where I thought, I'll have an ulcer by the time I'm 25 if I teach. So I have great respect for teachers because you have to be on your game every day, all day long. And if I had a particularly rough night, let's say when my kids were little, I could go in and say to my secretary, hold my calls, I just need a cup of coffee for a half hour. You can't do that when you're teaching children. So then I decided instead to go into computers, and I started out as a computer programmer analyst and worked my way up through that department. And I was eventually the commissioner of that department. And that was a joint city-county department. So we provided services to both the city and the county. And that's how I learned so much about both city government and county government, because we were automating much of it. It was so long ago that not a lot of it was automated, at least in-house. And so we did a lot of work and learned a lot about government.
So you went from fingers and toes to computers?
Yes, exactly.
Big step. What programming language did you use, or what were they working with?
In college, it was Fortran, and then when I got to the city county, it was RPG initially on the IBM machine, and then COBOL. And so I understand there are still a lot of legacy systems down in the state that run on COBOL. If I'm looking for another job, people are telling me I could do that. That was quite a long time ago, as you can tell by the languages.
Do you keep up with the computer world, or is that in the past now?
That's in the past. You know, that that world, as you're probably aware, changes so often that to stay in that, you've really got to work very hard to stay up on all of what's happening and keep current with it all. So, no, I have not stayed up with them.
So you were in the IT department with the with the county and working with the city as well. Is that how you ended up as budget director in the city of Troy?
Yes. There was a little bit of more to that. When the Republicans won enough seats to take the majority on the council in 93, former Assemblyman Neil Kelleher, who's since passed, was the head of the transition team for the Republicans. And I felt like I could help him a bit because I knew a lot about how the city operated and how the county operated. And so I said to him, if there's anything I can do for you and the transition team, you know, just don't hesitate to let me know. And he said, well, how about being on the transition team? So I said, okay. And I helped with former Assemblyman Kelleher to identify all of the issues that the incoming council would be dealing with. Unfortunately, one of the big things they were going to be dealing with was a huge budget deficit that had resulted from the fact that the previous council had mortgaged 7 of the city buildings and then used that capital for a limited amount of capital projects, but mostly to subsidize the general fund, leaving a pretty big gap between revenues, ongoing revenues and ongoing expenses. So I worked with the city then on the budgeting. I worked with them on the legislation that was required at the state level to borrow to pay off that debt, and then create the Troy MAC.
And the MAC is the Municipal Assistance Corporation?
That's correct.
Mm-hmm. And that's the money that saved the city at the time, but that continues to
haunt the city, yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Like any loan, you have to pay it back.
Yes, exactly.
And so you were there right around the time that the city government changed from the manager form to the mayoral structure?
Yes, that's correct. The election of 95 was the first election for strong mayor again, after it had been the council city manager form of government. So I ran for mayor that year, and that was my first foray into elective politics. And I lost by about 119 votes out of 16,000 cast. So looking back, that wasn't bad. At the time, it was devastating. But looking back, that wasn't bad for my first run, particularly in a city with a much stronger Democratic enrollment than Republican enrollment.
Now, the county itself has a stronger Democratic enrollment, doesn't it, than Republican?
Yes, it does. It does. Mm-hmm.
And yet there's never been a Democratic county executive. Why do you think that is?
There is a huge number of unaffiliated voters, and I think they lean more conservative, lean more Republican than Democrat. So it's the cities, as probably with any location in New York State, it's the cities that are heavily Democratic, and then the majority of the suburban and rural areas go Republican. So,
well, I wanted to touch base with you on the city budget issue. I know that as former budget director and city manager in Troy, you must have some insights into the current situation. I know your brother is currently the mayor, Patrick Madden.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you get your news about the city from the newspapers or you have a privileged...
No, I get it from Twitter and from the newspaper, yeah.
And what are your insights on the current situation? How does it compare to when you were in the thick of it in the city of Troy?
Well, as you said, I think a lot of the problem with the city budget remains the fact that you're paying off for that debt that occurred initially when the city mortgaged all of its buildings and used that money for operating purposes. So they were, in essence, spending more than they were bringing in on a regular basis. On and off, that has continued since then, despite the fact that we should have learned our lesson from when that happened. There are some budgets that have clearly underestimated expenses and overestimated revenues in order to appear balanced. I think that Mayor Madden is trying to bring the budget into balance in terms of ongoing revenue and ongoing expenses, but it's difficult. And so you find yourself, I think this year, much of the increase in spending is related to employee health insurance costs. And while the Affordable Care Act was intended to control the cost, the continual increase cost of health insurance, it may have slowed it down, but it still grows every year. So the question is, how do you pay for that with ongoing revenue? And if you don't increase taxes, then you look at fees. And if you don't like the fees and you don't like the increased taxes, then you've really got to make cuts. And when you're talking about $2.9 or $3 million worth of cuts, you're really talking about cutting services. So it's something that nobody really wants to say, gee, I'll give up getting my road plowed, or I'll give up having my garbage picked up. But by the same token, again, we get back to the regressive property taxes, and people aren't exactly stepping up to say, yeah, I'd like to pay more in property taxes either, understandably. So he's really caught between a rock and a hard place.
And is the county in a similar situation, or is it financially better off?
The county is financially better off right now, but I always like to compare county finances to a teeter-totter. Because we provide so much in terms of support services to those who have fallen on hard times, when the economy is bad and you have more people who have lost their job or maybe their hours have been cut back and they need the services of county government, that's also at the time when they're spending less money, so we're collecting less sales tax. And so you have a need for more services, yet you have less revenue to pay for it. That's what it looked like in 2001 when we had that little bit of a recession. That's what it looked like in 2008 for several years when we had the Great Recession. Right now, we're at a point where unemployment is low, more people are employed, so less people need our services. So you have less pressure on your expenditure side. And people that are employed are out there spending money at our stores, and so we're collecting a good amount of sales tax. We're back to the pre-recession amount of growth in sales tax, and so you catch your breath. And during those years, as they say, in the good years you prepare for the bad, and the bad years you prepare for the good. Well, in the good years, then we try to build up that fund balance so that when we need to rely on that for an unforeseen need, which again was pretty much what we were looking at in 2008 when the recession hit and nobody had anticipated, or if the state shifts some additional costs to us in their budget, which is effective April 1, and we've already got a budget in place, you need that rainy day fund, that fund balance to, you know, kind of get you through those tough times. So that's where we're at right now. It's a good year, but that's subject to change at any moment based on what happens at the federal government, what happens at the state government, and what happens with the overall economy.
You have a very wide-ranging grasp of government and finance, which mm-hmm. I think puts you in a minority amongst many elected officials who seem to pop up out of nowhere at times, or their backgrounds don't have much to do with what it takes to run very large businesses, as the county and city governments sometimes are. Mm-hmm. You have a master's degree in social policy from SUNY Empire State College, which seems like it's that background has helped you out. Mm-hmm. What's your take on the I think that you have a level of professionalism that transcends party affiliation, maybe confirmed by the fact that you've run unopposed for at least a couple of elections, right? Mm-hmm. Three elections in a very contentious political environment. That's
yes,
quite a tribute. So, what's your take on the current hyper politicized climate that we live in now, both on certainly at a national level, but even all the way down to the local level?
It makes me crazy, quite frankly, because I think that people are elected to get things done. And I look at Washington, for instance, and it always seems as though if the Republicans want something, the Democrats are going to say no. If the Democrats want something, the Republicans are going to say no. And I know that there are some things that get done with support across the aisle, and so perhaps that just is not getting the attention that the controversy is getting. But it's very frustrating because there are a lot of issues out there that are affecting people that we need to see action on. And people seem to be polarized about taking action, making difficult decisions, because they're worried about how it will affect them politically. You look at immigration, for instance. It is such a hot topic, and yet how many years have we been hearing? I think at least through the first term of George W. Bush, we were hearing about immigration reform being necessary, and we're still not seeing anything get advanced on that. And that's very critical, not only for people who are looking to immigrate to this country or are here already, but also to the employers that rely on them. Our farming community that I mentioned earlier relies very heavily on the ability to bring in workers from other countries during that harvest time, and it gets more and more complicated for them each year. You look at the healthcare that still needs work. I don't think anybody can deny the fact that that still needs work when we still see such a high cost, not only to the taxpayers, but also to the people, the employees and employers who are buying health insurance. And yet, people don't want to roll up their sleeves and deal with that, I think, because of the fear of the political ramification of saying to somebody, you may get more, you may get less. One of the people who ran for the nomination on the Republican side for president, John Kasich was talking about Social Security and what needs to get done there. And he said some people who've been able to save money toward their retirement, who have a pension, may need to get a little bit less from Social Security. So those that weren't able to set aside money, didn't have a pension option with their employer, can get a little bit more so that they can survive. Those kind of statements make a lot of sense. But what happened to John Kasich? Well, he didn't get the nomination. And was it perhaps because somebody was holding that against him? Sure, I would guess probably in some part. But it's also that what he was saying made sense. It wasn't controversial. And I think so much is focused on the controversial comments, the sideshow, the circus, if you will, that we're missing out on when logical good things are happening in government. And so I get very frustrated. I think people should put aside their labels once you get elected and work for the common good, get done what you need to do. Good government makes good politics, and good politics can make good government if you work together.
In the course of our coverage of the last election, both at the local and county level, at some point your strategies came up in discussion of what was happening in Rensselaer County politics, and I think some of the people involved in the election credited you with trying to make a graceful transition and avoid the toxic national political climate by supporting your deputy Christopher Meyer in the primary, and yet what we've ended up with is a new county executive who is in the midst of a big controversy about sexual harassment and also who very early on took an anti-immigrant stance in his campaign, really reflecting the national climate. So it seems like that transition wasn't entirely successful. What do you see coming ahead for Rensselaer County?
Well, I think the couple of things that you mentioned, certainly whether it is at the local level, at the national level, public sector or private sector, sexual harassment is a concern and is becoming more of a topic of late, which is good. I think people need to talk about it so that it can be dealt with and people know very clearly it's not acceptable to mistreat anybody in the workplace for whatever reason. Going forward, then, I think there is so much to do with administering county government that has to be the focus of the incoming administration, and I believe it will be. I met with Assemblyman McLaughlin shortly after the election, and I had all of the department heads prepare some transition report, very small, and then so that they could be read. I didn't want to hand him 250 pages of homework, but and then he's been meeting with each of the department heads too, and getting a real flavor of what's going on in government, and you know, where are the issues that we need to address right away? Where are the issues that we need to address in the long term? So, I think that he's working very hard to be ready to hit the ground running. And in terms of, you know, my background, I brought in budgeting, I brought in administrative background. His has been more of a legislative focus, but I think he's also surrounding himself with people that can help him from an administrative point of view as well. So it doesn't worry me that he doesn't necessarily have a lot of administrative experience behind him, because he's putting together, I think, you know, a team that will be able to get that done. It's important because, and I know he knows this, in county government, there are a lot of people that rely on our services every single day. And you need to make certain that those services are being provided, you know, that the trains are still running on time, if you will. I know he understands that, so.
If only we had trains in Rensselaer County.
Yes.
Well, one of the things that's puzzling, I think, for folks from the outside is the recent decision to pay a settlement to an outgoing employee of the county legislature, Rich Crist, $60,000 to settle a claim.
And then the expectation he's going to be rehired as director of operations on a salary of $105,000. Can you shed any light on what happened here?
That one I can't, actually. I wasn't involved with the dismissal, his dismissal, nor was I involved in the settlement of the lawsuit. He was a legislative employee, and therefore I didn't have any role in his hiring nor firing, and likewise, I'll be gone when he comes back. So that one I don't have a lot of insight in. I'm sorry.
So it does bring up that again the issue of the electoral process in Rensselaer County, where, as we discussed, the Democrats have an enrollment advantage over the Republicans, but the so-called minor parties play a major role.
Yes.
And it seems like there's a throughout Rensselaer County there's a job opening for folks who want to play with these minor party lines and. We've seen it in Troy, and we've seen it most recently in the legislative election, where, in particular, the Green Party line was taken by people who weren't endorsed, who were not Greens and were not endorsed by the Greens, but they appeared on the
mm-hmm.
ticket.
Mm-hmm.
Which, to a certain extent, I think diminishes the elections. People look at that as though there's something wrong going on, whether or not it's illegal. It just doesn't seem straightforward. People who are voting on a straight ticket are not getting the candidates that they think they're getting.
Mm-hmm.
Is this a new thing? Is this something that's been going on a while? Is it something we can do anything about, something to worry about?
It has been going on for as long as I've been aware of politics. way back when in the city party, or in the city, rather, the Democratic Party also controlled the Conservative Party years ago. Now, that's more often controlled, if you will, by the Republicans. But it is a matter of state law that allows people to be cross-endorsed, that has that little bit of a feeding frenzy going on, if you will. Other states don't have that. You can only be endorsed by one party. But because we can be endorsed by multiple parties, and to some degree, I think in its purest sense, it was initiated because you could be a conservative and I'm a Republican. You may, though, agree that I'm the best candidate, even though I'm not a conservative. And so you encourage your fellow conservatives to endorse me, the Republican candidate, because I've got the best plan for dealing with the issues at hand. Unfortunately, now what happens is I'm a Republican and you're a Republican, and I say, hey, I need the conservative line, so why don't you switch your party to conservative, and then you can pick your committee people and your committee members, and they can endorse me as the Republican for the conservative line as well. So it's veered off the original path, which was, intended to allow other parties who couldn't field the candidate to support their candidate of choice. And as I say, way back when I ran for mayor in 95, someone who was at the time the head of the Liberal Party said, well, maybe I should talk to you, about us endorsing you. I'm like, a Liberal Party? And he goes, let me ask you, what do you think that a Liberal wants for the city at this time when we're in such turmoil? And I said, I'm not sure what. And they said, same thing the Conservatives and Republicans and Democrats all want. We want the city to get back on track. And, we want the city budget to not be the overwhelming issue that's driving businesses out or driving people out of the city or making, people wonder why would we ever, want to locate there because there's such turmoil there. So in that sense, it would be logical to say, yeah, then you want to have that ability to cross endorse if you think somebody's got a good plan. But as I say, I think it's veered off that path a bit.
Does that seem to be a uniquely Rensselaer County trajectory, or is this happening in counties and municipalities throughout the state?
Yes, it's throughout the state. That's not unique to Rensselaer County by any means.
I thought maybe there's something in the Tamahanak reservoir water. So one of the things that strikes me in working in Troy for several couple decades is the extent to which there's such a negative tone to a lot of the civic debate that's mm-hmm. along party lines.
And yet it's also one of the most caring places I've ever lived, where we talked earlier about Joseph's House and Unity House and, you know, people who've dedicated their lives to making things better for people who for whatever reason, can't make it on their own. Mm-hmm. What can we do about that? What causes it, and what can be done, you think? Negativity and really unkindness to people who are disabled.
Well, I think certainly there's a lot on the blogs about not necessarily disabled, but politicians. And so I told my brother when he got into politics after having been in a while, the first thing is don't read the blogs. But even other exchanges that you see in Facebook where people have to identify themselves, they can still be pretty harsh. And perhaps that just reflects the fact that they haven't had to, you know, sit down across the table from people and say, well, you know, here's my idea, love it or leave it, and then have the other person say, well, have you ever thought about this from my perspective? And maybe that exchange needs to happen a little more. I think one of the things that we see right now is people listen to other people, either locally or on TV, that reinforce their beliefs. They're less likely to say, let's go out and have a beer with somebody that has a different set of beliefs, or they're less likely to turn on CNN if they're Fox watchers, you know? And I think there needs to be more dialogue with people face-to-face who have differing opinions if we're going to get beyond the hyper... hyper-cruel statements at times, the hyper-insensitive comments that are made sometimes. And I don't think people mean to be insensitive or cool, but when you look at them from the other perspective, sometimes that can be what they are. We need more dialogue face-to-face in order to appreciate the other person's point of view and why it is that we need to consider that when we're looking at what are we going to support as a community.
Now, you've, as county executive, we're speaking with Kathy Gimeneau, the outgoing county executive for Rensselaer County. You've had to serve people in widely diverse situations, City of Troy, City of Rensselaer, Scaticoke, Steventown, mm-hmm. Petersburg, mm-hmm. Hoosick Falls. Really, the spectrum is breathtaking. To go, you're right now sitting in our studios in North Central Troy, mm-hmm. and a half an hour from here is the bucolic Steventown. I mean, what is it mm-hmm. like to try to serve all these people?
Well, it's really been interesting. I always feel like if you can learn something new every day, that's a good day. You know, it keeps you fresh. And one of the things that I always prided myself in doing is being out in the community a lot. And the reason that that's important is because people will approach you when you're out in the community where they might not pick up the phone and call you at the county building or come in and talk at a legislative meeting, because now, you know, it feels like they're coming into your turf and they feel a little bit uncomfortable. But if you go out into their turf, then you're a lot more likely to hear things that you might not otherwise hear. And that's where I learned so much about the people throughout this community and learned a lot about how it is that we should be providing services or how it is that we should be, you know, proposing changes in terms of legislation to benefit the people that we serve. And so whether it's a good time, you know, I was out in Hoosick this afternoon and things were great and we're just meeting up with some veterans that are out there and that was great, or whether it's going out to Hoosick when they've got water problems, the PFOA issue, or water problems in terms of the storms back in July. If you're out and about, you'll hear things that you wouldn't otherwise hear. You're better able to connect people with the services that they need. You're better able to make sure that those services match the needs and aren't just, you know, throwing something at the wall to see what sticks. So it's a big county, but I really enjoyed seeing every part of it and getting to meet people in every part of it.
What's your take on the water problem in Hoosick Falls and Petersburg?
Well, the biggest problem with that, that creates a lingering problem even beyond the fact that the water now is filtered and is safe to drink, is that it took so long for this information to come out. In the first instance, the mayor got out to all of us in the at the county level, at the state level, at the federal level, hey, we have this chemical in our water, and it's not limited by any statute or regulation, but I want to get it out. And that didn't really raise the red flag because it wasn't regulated. And it was sometime a year later, not quite a year later, before the EPA says, you have what in your water? And because of that, people had continued to drink the water. People thought that, well, if it was bad for us, it would be regulated. Somebody would be telling us, don't drink it. And so that's caused a lingering doubt about, is government looking out for our best interests in this regard? And then you hear that there are tens of thousands of chemicals like this that are not being checked for because they haven't been determined yet at some state or federal level to be impacting health in such a way that they should be regulated, that they should be gotten out of the water, et cetera. And so it has, I think, left people very leery of, can we trust government to have our best interests at heart? And that's a very hard thing for government now to overcome, to say, you know, yes, we are here and we're trying to help. And of course, anytime you have a situation like this, be it the PFOA in the water in Hoosick and Petersburg, or be it the Dewey Lofal landfill down in Nassau, which is also a federal Superfund site, it seems to take forever. And indeed, it does take forever, it seems, for anything to be resolved. Dewey Lofal was declared a state Superfund site, I want to say like 35 years ago, and a federal Superfund site 5, 6, 7 years ago. And it's not any closer to being dealt with in terms of here's the plan for this than it was at the start. There are wells, monitoring wells, and there's water that is leaching out of the landfill that's being run through a treatment plant and before it's put back into the ground. But there's nobody saying, and here's what we're going to do with all of this contaminants in this landfill. Twice the amount of contaminants that were in Love Canal, by the way. So a significant problem, and it just seems to take forever. So again, that is frustrating people and leaving them feeling as though we've got a problem today that I need somebody to be paying more attention to. And we're just not getting that sense of urgency from government that people would, I think, prefer to see. So it's frustrating for them, understandably so.
Well, we're almost out of time, and I guess I should follow up on that. That obviously sounds like one of the major problems facing Rensselaer County. Are there others that leap to mind?
Not that I can think of off of the top of my head. We just spent over $22 million to bring our public safety radio system up to new technology. The one we were running was dating back to the late 90s. And so our first responders are going to be well-positioned going forward. As I said earlier, we're leaving the finances in good shape. We've got a human service cabinet now in place that looks at families and individuals in their totality, not just from a perspective of social services, of food stamps, of, you know, mental health, of substance abuse, looks at them in totality to try to help them get into a position where they can be self-sufficient again. So I think right now, you know, things are going pretty well, pretty stable. We do worry about what's going to happen in Washington and how is that going to affect us here, whether it's healthcare in particular, budget overall. We worry about what's happening at the state with the budget as well, because that stuff tends to run downhill. And we also, I think, are watching what's going on in terms of government trying to further restrict both people and businesses from being able to be successful. So,
well, we're out of time. Is there anything you'd like to add before we close?
I just want to thank all the people that have given me the opportunity to serve for 16 and a half years. It has been an amazing experience. I want to thank all the people that I've worked with inside and outside of county government because I've had an amazing team as well. So it's been terrific. I thank you.
Well, thanks so much for taking the time to speak with us. Kathy Gimeno.
Thank you, Steve.
You've been listening to the Hudson Mohawk Magazine on WOOC 105.3 FM. Troy, tune in every day at 7 a.m., 9 a.m., and 6 p.m. for more of the Hudson Mohawk Magazine.